ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 29, entitled Talks Between Narada and King Prachinavarthi, Verse 47. Tasmat karma subhadhishman, ajnana attakashishu, mata drishtim katha shrotra, spasya aparishta vastushu, tasmat karma subhadhishman, ajnana adathakashishu, mata drishtim kṛtha śrotra,
mātā drṣṭim kṛtha śrotra,
sparśiṣva aspṛṣṭa vastuṣu, tasmāt karma subhadhishman, ajñānādarthakāśiṣu, mātā drṣṭim kṛtha śrotra, spasyishvaspṛṣṭa vastuṣu, tasmāt karma subhadhishman, ajñānādarthakāśiṣu, mātā drṣṭim kṛtha śrotra, spasyishvaspṛṣṭa vastuṣu.
Therefore,
karmasu, in fruity activities,
bahishman,
O King Prachina Varisha,
ajnana,
out of ignorance,
attakashishu,
in the glittering fruity results,
never.
Artha drishtim,
considering to be the aim of life.
Kṛtāha,
do.
Śrotra sparśiṣu,
placing to the ear.
Aspṛṣṭa,
without touching.
Vastuṣu,
real interest.
My dear King Bahishman, you should never, out of ignorance, take the Vedic rituals or to fruity activity, which may be pleasing to hear about or which may appear to be the goal of self-interest. You should never take these to be the ultimate goal of life. Purport by In Bhagavad Gita 2:42-43 it is said, Yāvimam puṣpitam vācam pravadyante avacchitaḥ vedavāta gatāpārthā nānyadasti iti vādinaḥ kāmātmanā svargapārā janma karma bhadaprataṁ priyāviśeṣā bahulāṁ bhogaiśvaryā gatiṁ prati. Men of more knowledge are very much attached to the flowery words of the Vedas, which recommend various fruitful activities for elevation to heavenly planets, result in good birth, power and so forth. Being desirous of sense gratification in opulent life, they say that there is nothing more than this. Generally, people are very much attracted to the fruitful activities sanctioned in the Vedic rituals. One may be very much attracted to be coming elevated to heavenly planet by performing great sacrifices like those of King Bahishman. Sri Narada Muni wanted to stop him, Bahishman, from engaging in such routine activities. Therefore, he is now directly telling him, don't be interested in such temporary benefits. In modern civilization, people are very much interested in exploiting the resources of material nature through the methods of science. Indeed, this is considered advancement. This is not actually advancement, however, but is simply pleasing to hear. Although we are advancing according to such concocted methods, we are forgetting our real purpose. Bhaktivinoda Thakur therefore says, Jadavitya yada maya vaibhava toma bhajane badha. Materialistic studies are the glare of maya only, for they are an obstacle to spiritual progress. The temporary comforts of life experienced either on this planet or on other planets are all to be taken as illusory because they do not touch the real purpose of life. The real purpose of life is go back home, back to Godhead. Ignorant of the real purpose of life, people take either gross materialistic activities or ritualistic activities. King Bhagavan is here and requested not to be attached to such activities. In the Vedas, it is stated that the performance of sacrifice is the actual purpose of life. A section of the Indian population known as the Arya Samajis lay too much stress on sacrificial portion of the Vedas. This verse indicates, however, that such sacrifices are to be taken as illusory. Actually, the aim of human life should be God realization or Krishna consciousness. The Vedic performances are, of course, very glittering and pleasing to hear about, but they do not serve the real purpose of life. Om Ajnanatimirantasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Ulmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Savitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Swa Kadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamsha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanyutam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanyutamsha हे कृष्णा करुणा सिंधो दीनबंधो जगतपते गोपेशा गोपिका कांता राधा कांता नमोस्तुते तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावनेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवी प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये वांछकल्पदरूपेस्य कृपासिंधुभ्येव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम ये महापुरो विभु निर्माय सेते यदमूष पुरुष भुंते गुणाशो षोडश षोडशात्मक सोलं कृष्ण भगवान वचांसि मे हरे कृष्ण नारद मुनि इज कंटिन्यूइंग टू इंस्ट्रक्ट किंग बहिष्मान और प्राचीन बहिष्ट हियर देयर इज अ क्लियर स्टेटमेंट टू स्टॉप fruiting activities or ritualistic ceremonies according to Vedas. Does Krishna ever promote Vedic rituals, Karma Kanda, in Bhagavad Gita?
Yeah.
Yes? No? Yes?
Yeah.
Yes. Where? Which chapter?
Third chapter.
Third chapter. Krishna promotes Vedic rituals, that's the reality. Sahetna Prajasrishta Puravacha Prajapati. So he says, yes, even the time of creation, the system is already established. The Vedic Karmakanda system, wherein people can worship the demigods, offer sacrifice, and in return, they will benefit. Devan Bhavayantena. By pleasing the demigods, what happens? Te Deva Bhavayantua. Then, in return, the Devas, they will satisfy the living entities by giving according to their needs, according to their worship. So, the system has already been established in Bhagavad Gita. But at the same time, Krishna rejects. Krishna accepts, Krishna says about Vedic rituals, then he rejects also. Because there are different levels of people who may be attached. So, in the Vedic times, the gradual progression was possible. So, to encourage everyone, Krishna included. At the same time, here also the verses are quoted. Yamam Pushpidam Vacha Pravadyati Avishitaha Vedavarvadarata Patanyasna Anyadastiti Vadanaha. So, this is quoted this verse. Telling this people who are attached to Vedic rituals, they think that there is no other message from Vedas other than fruitive activities and in turn sense enjoyment. That's why it is mentioned Pushpitam Vacha. Here also it is mentioned in the translation itself. It is very pleasing. If someone hears, we can go to the heavenly planet. There is no suffering. There is enjoyment of all different kinds. Here you have to follow four ordinary principles. But if you go to heavenly planet, there is unlimited enjoyment without any restrictions. One can drink. Somaras is there. There are so many apsaras. There are a lot of singing and dancing and intoxication. Everything is there in Swarga Yoni, in taking birth in Swarga. And there is no old age. So it's very attractive. So the message of Vedic sacrifices and the resultant results are very attractive. So those who are pious, they got interested in Vedic rituals. By the way, generally, worshipping the demigods are in the mode of goodness. So the Vedic ceremonies which are prescribed in Vedic texts are in the mode of goodness. One has to be in goodness to follow these Vedic rituals and to perform pious activities. So it's a completely a different system, and it is quite an organic system. All the worship, everything usually uses the ingredients from the earth. The whole process is pretty environmentally friendly. So it was a system which is not harming the planet, nor the individual, nor the mind, because the whole process is in the mode of goodness. And that's why if you read the 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, which we were reading recently, third verse talking about Panchagni Vidya, the 5 sacrificial fires and the 5 offerings through which one can go to the heavenly planets. Faith is an offering, worship is an offering, and then in turn one can go to the heavenly planet, that is the fire of heavenly planet. And then from the fire of heavenly planet, when these oblations are offered by the ritual ceremony at the time of death, this fire of heavenly planet will offer a body, a celestial body, to enjoy in the moon planet or other celestial kingdoms. So that is the reward. So that is the result. Then one can enjoy for n number of years. And it's a good time there, having all different kinds of enjoyment without knowing the old days. And then at one point, what happens?
Come back.
But one see that the garland, the denizens of heavenly planet, they have beautiful garlands made of parijala flowers, very fragrant and very attractive. But one day they start seeing that it is getting faded. It is rotting nearly. Then they understand it is coming their life, that is the last day of their lives. Then kind of they panic. And then they are offered to the cloud. the fire of cloud. Then in turn from the cloud comes the rain. So they are a living entity. In that demigod body is offered to the cloud, and from there to the fire, from there to the rain, rain is offered to the earth, and earth is transformed to the grains, and grain is eaten by a man, and then it is produced as semen in a male body, and that is offered to the fire of woman. In that way, one starting from the earth, going for the heavenly enjoyment, and again returning to the earthly planet. So this is a cycle. So the Vedic literature suggests such things, but Krishna asks, what's the use? Because again, one has to enjoy and one has to come back. There is no point in such worship. Vedic time, the kings, they used to know the importance of piety, they used to know the importance of Vedic sacrifices. That's why even after Bali, he usurped the throne of heaven. So Indra was jobless. He had to go here or there, nothing to do. And then what he did after usurping the kingdom, Bali became the Indra, and then what happened? What he did immediately? Who knows? What he did immediately after getting the throne of heaven, becoming the Indra, ruling over everyone? He didn't stop the sacrifices, but he started the sacrifices. Because to keep up the heavenly kingdom, one needs piety. And if one needs piety, then one has to perform the sacrifices. So immediately he asked the Brahmanas to start sacrifices on his behalf, so that he can accrue sufficient piety so that he can maintain his status quo. See, so this is actually the mode of goodness. This is the mode of goodness, because even to have material happiness, one has to come to the mode of goodness. So modern society is far away from that. There is no mode of goodness, rather everything is passion and ignorance. So a materially intelligent person knows that Sattugun is necessary for enjoyment. So there is Sukham in the mode of goodness, in Sattugun. That's why in the 14th chapter you can say that one of the qualities of the mode of goodness is Sukham. It is the material happiness and satisfaction, contentment. It is the quality of the mode of goodness. So these Vedic kings, they knew. So they acted favorably to the Vedic injunction so that they can maintain their position. Even Hiranyakashipu was very powerful. He was on the next level. Because he was so powerful that he didn't perform any sacrifices. Rather, he destroyed all the sacrifices. He sent his people to earth. Wherever there are sacrifices, you create disturbances. You kill Brahmanas and Kshatriyas. Because Brahmanas are wiped out, there will be no encouragement for Kshatriyas to conduct sacrifices, to organize sacrifices. So in that way, the earthly piety is going to diminish. So when the earthly piety is going to diminish, the demigods are not getting their oblations, so their strength is going to diminish as well. See, it's a very strategic plan. Meanwhile, I will go and I will kill Vishnu and come back. Because devatas are giving power to Vishnu, because devatas are worshipping and glorifying Vishnu all the time. And now Vishnu is acting just like a small child who can be manipulated by simply giving some sweets, a candy, a lolly. They become very... So in that way, Vishnu has taken up such a lowly position, just being swayed by the sweet words of the demigods. So I fix Vishnu, you fix the Brahmanas, in turn the demigods also will get fixed. So we will take care of the whole universe and we can control everything. So he did that. He cannot touch Vishnu. In turn, what happened? All the sacrifices were stopped. The demigods lost their power. All the demigods, they had to bow down in front of Hiranyakashipu. And all the seasons will produce all the results in one season. Everywhere, he got everything. Whatever he wanted, he got. And if someone does good karma, they will get bad results. And if someone performs bad karma, they will get good results. Who can control the world like this? So in current, demons are nothing. They cannot even drink pure water. They don't have pure air to breathe. And seasons are out of control. They have claimed that there are no problems with the season. By their words they have satisfied themselves. So these are the current demons. They cannot bring any prosperity to any part of the world. So they are adopting to demoniac sentences, but they themselves are experiencing so much of havoc. And they are giving havoc to the whole world. So there is nothing in comparison to Hiranyakashipu. One time Srila Prabhupada was asked this question, that now the nuclear war could happen and the whole world could be destroyed. Then what will happen? This is not the end of the world. So if they destroy the whole world, what will happen? Prabhupada said, even if they destroy the whole world, for the demigods it is just like this, like a flick. They can recreate everything. It's not a big deal. The demigods are so powerful. So the modern so-called civilization may create so much of chaos in this world, still from the demigod perspective they can manage. Or from the perspective of Krishna, it is nothing. So this is demigod's power. And Hiranyakashipu could control those demigods. That's the difference. That's the difference between modern demons and the Vedic demons. They really had some power. Because they were to a great degree in tune with the Vedic system. So if you are in tune with the system, then it is easier to attain power and to reap the benefits, rather than going completely against it. In Ishopanishad, you read this point that any knowledge is Veda. Have you read this? Any knowledge is Veda. What is the meaning of that? Any knowledge that you find, if the real knowledge, it is Veda. Any comment from anyone? What does that mean? We have also studied Ishopanishad. What is the meaning of it? Any knowledge you find anywhere, even by the materialist, from the atheist, from any religion, even from the fruity workers, Mudha, Naratama, Maya, and anyone. But any knowledge is Veda.
Yes.
Talking about Krishna's energies. Okay, Mr. Telling, it is talking about Krishna's energies. But if they are telling wrong information, or if they they are giving the right knowledge, yes, it is Krishna's energy. Okay, everything is Krishna's energy. Even Maya is also Krishna's energy. Avidya is also Krishna's energy. But why? Everything is Veda. Any real knowledge is Veda. Even if it comes out from any source.
Vedas gives knowledge to all the levels of people, of their understanding. And people take that much knowledge so they can enjoy their sense gratification.
But many people are not even aware of Vedas explicitly. Isn't it? Many of the atheists, they don't even heard the term Veda. So how can you say the Vedas are giving knowledge to such people?
But more or less they have heard from their friend circles, or colleges, or schools like that. They have
scrap
from here and there.
Yes. Yeah.
In the verse in Bhagavad Gita, it says that the Vedas deal mainly with the subject of three modes of material nature.
Yes.
So three modes means it includes all the...
Yes. In one principle, Veda has all knowledge in principle. That is understandable. Right? As Madhuri was pointing out, Trigunya Vishaya Veda. So, all the knowledge is included, material and spiritual. That we can understand. Then, when someone's activity or knowledge, when it gets aligned with Vedic knowledge, then it works. So in this world, whatever works, you have to see that somewhere they are aligning with the Vedic knowledge. If that alignment is there, then it works. Otherwise it doesn't work. So it's not really a rocket science. From the Vedic perspective, whatever works, it's not a rocket science, it's already there in the Vedic literature. In a subtle or in the gross form, in an implicit or in the explicit form, it is there. So when when it works, when it is yet alive, then it works. So Veda has all the knowledge. But we are not after this Trigunya Vishaya Veda, as it is mentioned in this purport. Here it is rejecting the fruitive activities, the ritualistic activities are rejected here. Because it's not going to give ultimate progress spiritually. It is very temporary. So in Kali Yuga especially, these things are not really going to work. There are no qualified brahmanas, there are no pure ingredients, nothing is there. We don't have the capacity to perform pure Vedic sacrifices. But there is a replacement. What is the replacement for Vedic rituals at this point? Yes, that is the highest. That will come to that. But what is the replacement in the current society?
What is mentioned in the
book? Just asking. Yeah, it is based on the purport.
For example,
that is ultimate. In between. Not yet. What the modern society is offering. Exactly. Advancement in the material, science and technology. That is the fruitive activity replacement. In other words, karmakanda replacement for the Kali Yuga offered by the current society is science and technology. Why? Because the purpose of karmakanda is to remove or alleviate suffering. So according to the teachings of Srila Prabhupada, what is the purpose of technology? Technology means a means to reduce, remove or alleviate suffering. If it is cold, we want the heater. If it is very hot, hot day, scorching hot, we want an aircon. And if I speak, many people cannot listen, then we need the microphone. Right? Do you think in the Vedic times when Shukadeva Goswami was speaking, how many people were sitting there? Probably millions of people were sitting and listening. Shukadeva Goswami speaking. But was he using a microphone? No, he was not using a microphone. But everyone could hear. They could understand. They could hear. At least they understood according to their own level. But at least they could hear. So there is a whole different system running that time. So we cannot. Here, we cannot listen. So technology means to alleviate suffering. So, fruitive activities, karmakanda is to alleviate or reduce suffering. Similarly, the purpose of technology is also the same. There is no difference. That's why we have so many things. So many things are coming up. Because this is an answer, or the so-called answer to suffering. So that is technology. Medical system. There are so many advanced medical systems. What for? To reduce suffering. So it's the same principle. However, even this modern science and technology, it has its good aspect because we can use in Krishna service, and at the same time it has its bad aspects also. Anything material, it has plus and minus. There is something which will be positive, something will be negative. So modern technology we have used because we are seeing using the microphone, it's being broadcasted, so there are so many benefits. And on the other side, technology is a great faith builder for the science. It's a faith builder. It builds faith in people. It instills faith in people to think that science knows everything and science can solve all the problems. This is the implicit faith that is developed by technology. Because in technology we can see conveniences, amenities. So one thinks, okay, technology is so giving so many things, so based on the science. So science can give solution to all the problems in the world, which is not true. So that kind of a faith is given by technology. And of course, there are professed atheists who use science and technology to reject God and religion. So one side, the faith building aspect is there, it is rampant by the technology primarily. Because when it goes to the core science, people are not so interested. People cannot really understand. But when it comes to technology, they can see some practical applications. So that is building faith in the core science, which is anyway not going so deep. It is stuck at many places. Because it's very difficult to understand Krishna's creation, even the material energy, it's very difficult to understand. That material energy in itself is inconceivable. It is not completely even at the grasp of Lord Brahma. He is the most intelligent person in this universe. Even the material energy can bewilder Lord Brahma. What to speak about living entities, other living entities. So, it's very complicated. So, people can spend so many years in researching. So many years. I was reading an article about a scientist, or many scientists, till the end of their life they are researching. Can you imagine till the end of their life? I remember I was in a conversation with one of my supervisors when I was doing my PhD. So he was planning his life. And I was shocking for me. He was telling, suppose if we take birth, and I would say, at the earliest, we get a PhD in late 20s, 25, 26. After that, it takes about 5 years to understand the whole thing, what everything is happening, really getting into it. Then, assume we can work till 65, 70, so maybe 40 years. We can dedicate 40 years to understand such and such things. So he was planning, I was saying, this is shocking. This is a life planning dedicated to understand this Jada Vidya, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, Jada Vidya. It's a Jada Vidya, it's not anything of much value, it can be an impediment in one's progressive spiritual life. So I was reading about one of the scientists, you know, they worked till the late 90s, whole life, just looking into just one thing, just looking into a neuron or a membrane, then the whole life is dedicated for that. Some people, whole life is dedicated into study and colony. And colonies. And colonies. Whole life. Till the age of 90, study and colonies. Because they have a sophisticated communication system, they have a social structure, they have a caste system, everything is simple. So studying that for the whole life. So can you imagine what's going to the next life? If you are meditating on ants, yam yam vabhisvaram bhavam tedityante kalevaram tam tam evi kauntaya sadata bhava bhavitaha. What are the state of mind? One leaves the body, that is the destination. So think, so this is indeed, it is Jada Vidya. It is Jada Vidya because it's not going to give any spiritual advancement. Rather, it's going to create such a problem, such a havoc to one's own life. So one has to be very careful when we are getting into different things. When we are getting into things, how much heart we are putting in, we have to be careful. So that's why the basic system, there is a retirement. One can go on, but one has to work till certain time, then one retire and completely focus on spiritual life. It's very important. Then talking about the fruitive activities, we can have a fruitive mentality. So there is fruitive activities coming on, and we also can have fruitive mentality as devotees. So we have to be very careful. That is, I will be serious in devotion service only if I get that. Especially when someone coming to Krishna consciousness, we can pick this consciousness very easily. If I get a job, if I get settled, then I become serious in Krishna consciousness. Isn't it? We have also gone through that. If I get that, then I become serious in Krishna consciousness. But this mentality can come even now, and we can carry this mentality for a very long time in our Krishna consciousness. I will be serious, not now. Can you see that in our mind? We know what's the mark or what's the next step. Don't talk about the highest platform. We know what's the next step, where we are, what could be the next step that we can see in Krishna consciousness. It's very easy, it's not very difficult. And what do we think? Not now. Let me take it easy for some time, and after some time, I will go next. Does that come to the mind? We know really that that's the next step. We had to do this. We had to do this service properly. We had to chant properly. We had to do this. Yes, we had to make that step. But there's an impediment created by our own mind. That fruitive tendency. Thinking, not now. You know, let me a little bit relax. Enjoy a little bit. And then we will take it. So this is the same fruitive mentality we are carrying. And we need to work on it in consciously. Otherwise it's not going to just go away. We have to take that step consciously. That's where the prayer comes. That's where our seriousness comes in place. So we talked about fruitive activities, karmakanda. That is a Vedic technology. That is a Vedic technology. It can give material happiness for a long time. So it's a Vedic technology. Then there is the modern technology, which is in the mode of passion and ignorance. And the highest technology is bhakti, that is the real spiritual technology. So Krishna rejects all the Vedic ritualistic activities. Here there are two verses quoted, and even a few verses later, in the same chapter in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna rejects and he makes a very interesting point. Yamanartha udapane sarvada samplodhuke tavan sarveshu vedeshu brahmanasya vijanataha. He talks about small well or small reservoirs of water and a big reservoir of water. He says, one who understands the meaning behind the Vedas, he doesn't have to perform the so-called karmakanda ritualistic activities, because the purpose of Veda is known. Purpose of Veda is known. Purpose of Veda is to serve the Lord. I will read this purport from 246. The rituals and sacrifices mentioned in the karmakanda divisions of the Vedic literature are meant to encourage gradual development of self-realization. And the purpose of self-realization is clearly stated in the 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita 15:50. The purpose of the studying the Veda is to know Lord Krishna. Right? Veda is sarve ahameva vedyo. It's very clearly mentioned. So self-realization means understanding Krishna and one's eternal relationship with Him. The relationship of the living entities with the Krishna also mentioned in 15th chapter, Bhagavad Gita 15:7. The living entities are part and parcel of Krishna. Therefore, revival of Krishna consciousness by the individual living entity is the highest perfection stage of Vedic knowledge. This is confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam 3:33:7 as follows. O my Lord, a person who is chanting your holy name, although born of a low family like the Chandala's dog eater, is situated on the highest platform of self-realization. Such person must have performed all kinds of penances and sacrifices according to Vedic rituals and studies, the Vedic literature, many, many times after making his birth in all the holy places of pilgrimage. Such a person is considered to be the best of the Aryan family. In other words, if he can chant Hare Krishna mantra, everything is taken care of. No need to perform any Vedic rituals. And Mahaprabhu proves that right from his appearance. So when Mahaprabhu appeared, he appeared on Purnima, right? He appeared on Purnima, but that time the eclipse was going on, lunar eclipse was going on. And so all the people were forced to go to Ganges, take bath and chant Krishna's names, because the time was very inauspicious. So Mahaprabhu appeared in the most inauspicious time according to the Vedic calculation, according to the Vedic Karmakanda understanding. Why? To show that even at that time, if one chants Krishna's name, one gets the highest benefit, or this is the way to invoke the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So right from the birth, Mahaprabhu defied Vedic Karmakanda sacrifices. And then that time in Navadvip, all the Panditas, they used to say that if we have to chant Krishna's name, one has to take a holy dip, one has to be at a certain time, then silently one can chant the holy names of the Lord. One cannot chant aloud. So many rituals, procedures were given before chanting Krishna's names. And Mahaprabhu threw everything out. He said, anytime, anywhere one can chant. There are no rules or regulations in chanting Hare Krishna mantra. Na niyame na kalaha. So Mahaprabhu said, it's one of the prime teaching, one can chant anytime, anywhere. So Mahaprabhu threw out all this karmakanda understanding of Hare Krishna Mahamantra, and that's why many people in Navadvip, they got envious of Mahaprabhu. Those who were caste Brahmin, they got envious. Why are they performing this nocturnal sankirtan? It's not the time to chant Hare Krishna Mahamantra, and it's just simply creating disturbances. And they wanted to offend devotees. like Shiva's Thakur. The Mahaprabhu, of course, punished such people. Mahaprabhu took this Hare Krishna Mahamantra and propagated throughout India. But to show that the Harina is beyond all this ritualistic understanding. So, one covering is Karmakanda covering, another is Gyanakanda, and Mahaprabhu rejected both. He rejected both. Karmakanda, Gyanakanda, Kevala, Vishaya Bhanda, Naradandasa Guru says. Both Karmakanda and Gyanakanda, they are Vishaya Bhanda. They are just a stock pile of poison. And we are eating. Just performing Karmakanda or Gyanakanda, it is Vishaya. No use. That's why he collected the Mayavadi sannyasis and made them into devotees. So even in Mahaprabhu's pastime, you can see that this ritualistic mentality held by the society. Like an interesting pastime is Subhadrai. You heard about Subhadrai? Subhadrai in Mahaprabhu's pastime. Subhadrai, he was a big landlord. And he was a big landlord, he had a lot of land, but things changed and eventually he became a servant to the Muslim ruler. So there was this Nawab was there, Syed Hussain Khan. So Syed Hussain Khan, somehow or other, he became the Nawab of Bengal. And Subhadrai, he became a servant who takes care of land and other properties of the Nawab. So one day, Nawab was with his wife, and on Nawab's body, she saw whipping marks. Marks, somebody has whipped him. So seeing the whipping marks, Nawab's wife asked, "Nawab, how this happened? Who beat you so badly?" So Nawab told, "Look, I was serving Subhadrai, a big landlord, when I was a child, and throughout my life I was serving him, and I was doing things properly, but one time I did very improper thing and he corrected me by whipping me. So that's why this mark, to remind me." So Nawab's wife became very angry. She told, "You had to execute this Subhadrai because he has punished you. So now you are the Nawab and you kill him." So Nawab said, "I cannot do that because he corrected me out of affection like a father. So it's very improper for me to kill him." But his wife insisted. Then finally they came upon a truce where Nawab told that, "I will not kill Subhadrai, rather I will convert him to Muslim." So that is equivalent as death, because the whole Brahmanas would ostracize such a person. So what he did, he took some water from a Muslim's pot and threw water on Subhadrai. So this is, you see, the ritualistic mindset of the Brahmin community. Because just simply by touching that water, they made him outcast. They ostracized him. They cannot be part of the society. So Subhadrai, he was an intelligent person. So he left his family, he left his property, and he just went out from Navadvip. And he went and he approached many Brahmanas. He asked Brahmanas, "So what should I do? Because I have been ostracized, I am an outcast because some water fell from the pot of a Muslim." That's all. So this Brahmana said, "Yes, we have a solution for you." They said, "First you boil some ghee." Okay, so boil some ghee, and when the ghee is boiling, you drink that ghee, and in that way you kill yourself. Oh. So this is the solution for being touched by some water by Muslims or Malaychas. So this is the solution. So Subhadrai was thinking, "Oh my God, this is very serious." To kill oneself, this is the ritualistic mentality, the caste Brahmins. Then he approached some other Brahmins. So they said, "Probably this is not the solution. You don't need to kill yourself." So they were a bit more merciful. So when he heard such contradictory instructions from different Brahmanas, he understood there is something wrong. Rather, I should approach Mahaprabhu. In Banaras, Mahaprabhu was there. So Subhadrai approached Mahaprabhu and asked, look, this happened in my life, so what shall I do now? So Lord Chaitanya told, you go to Vrindavan and you chant, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, 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 Rama Hare Hare. So this is the solution for everything. So whether it is Karma Kanda or the Jnana Kanda, whatever, that is not going to help us. Only thing is chanting Hare Krishna Mahamantra. So it is mentioned. Tava avata sara shiromani kevala ananda kanda. The Lord Das Thakur says, right? What's the beginning of the Parama Karana Pahudui Jana Bhutai Gora Chandra? So that is the solution. Upward Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda. And then there is only one kanda is there. Kanda means section. Veda has different section. So one kanda is Karma Kanda, Jnana Kanda. Reject everything. Kevala means one and only one. One kanda is there if you approach Lord Chaitanya and Nityananda. And what is that? Ananda Kanda. Ananda Kanda means the section of bliss. One can get be blissful in Krishna consciousness. So that is the only thing that we need to do. So that is the conclusion. So that's what here Narada Muni is telling King Prajina Bahishit. So there is no point performing all ritualistic activities, but come to devotional activities. Okay, I stop here and see the questions or comments.
The purpose of Karma Kanda, what is the purpose of it? Like if one does Karma Kanda, it goes up and then down and down. Is there any way to get out? Is there anything mentioned in there?
Yes. The purpose of Karma Kanda ultimately is for gradual elevation to spiritual knowledge and to go to the spiritual world. That's the ultimate purpose. So those who are so much attached to material enjoyment and those who cannot give up material enjoyment, then this sattvic way of attaining material enjoyment is prescribed. If you ask everyone, you be a spiritual person, some people will not listen. By the way, this is not applicable in the age of Kali. But generally, there were pious people and they are interested in material activities. So for them, this Karma Kanda activities are prescribed that so that at least they stick to Vedic rituals and they are not performing sinful activities. And then eventually what happens, even in one lifetime or in many lifetimes, the Brahmin priests would advise such ritualistic Brahmanas that there is no purpose of doing this ritualistic ceremonies, because by doing that you cannot get any ultimate benefit. So there is something more than that. So when one is sufficiently experienced with this ritualistic activities, the other advisors, the Brahmins, they would advise there is something more. So then they can think about the Jnana, they can understand about more about the Atma. Because even in Vedic ritualistic ceremonies, they accept the reality of Atma or the spirit soul. Because otherwise, what's the question of going to the heavenly planets or further enjoyment next lives? So they can make gradual progress. But that takes many lifetimes. In Kali Yuga, we don't have long time because already the situation is very bad. First of all, there are no qualified brahmanas to perform ritualistic ceremonies. There are no pure ingredients. There is no pure place or time. So things are topsy-turvy. So the only option is, in reality, chanting Hare Krishna Mantra. So it is not for this age. This Karma Kanda is not for this age. It's not going to work. So no demigods come. In previous Vedic times, demigods used to come. Like a cricket match, you can see the celebrity is playing. Similarly, like MCG, people used to sit around to watch this Vedic ritualistic ceremonies, and kings used to hold such. Yes, and they can see the Indra is coming, Shiva is coming, Brahma is coming, and fortunate, even Lord Vishnu is coming. So they could see that. They could see with their own eyes the demigods coming. So the interplanetary travel by the demigods was known at that point, which is not the case now. So it is very less effective. Any other further questions or comments? No? Okay, thank you very much. Granthrasimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Prabhupada.